Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
Just wanted to tell Ty, I appreciate how much you know about the Razorbacks. I mean, you're very knowledgeable for as young as you are.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorbacks.
Got my keg in the freezer. We're ready to get this thing rolling and go home, baby.
Connor Vandenberg didn't necessarily impact the team a ton offensively, but his defense was really, really solid on Saturday night. Had 6 blocks, 16 rebounds in the basketball game, and probably altered another 7 or so shots where North Texas, their guys, had to continuously think about the 7-3 player. And he was really pumped up, had a tip dunk at a point in the game, had an oop he caught from Jalen Tate. He also had a rebound which he slammed down. And this was a guy, again, that just had one of his better performances. I mean, he's only played in 2 games so far this season, but his best performance. I say that, but offensively, he stacked up 4 threes against Mississippi Valley State. But defensively, definitely his best performance to date.
I think you'd take the 15 rebounds any night and feel like you were going to win a lot of ball games when he can clean the glass like that.
Career high, by the way.
I was hoping he could find a couple easy buckets late when it became apparent, you know, he's got an easy double-double waiting on him. He could find a couple, you know, offensive putbacks or something around the basket to get to 10 points when he was sitting there with 6. And I'd like to see him get to that double-double. You know, I guess he nearly could have gotten there with block shots too, but he's going to have some double-doubles this year just because of rebounds and points. So look for him to have, I don't know how many this year, 6, 8, I don't know. But he's going to have some double-doubles to his credit this year.
And a lot of people were wondering, Jalen Williams didn't participate in this game based on the rotation. When Connor's playing as he did on with the defensive prowess, it's going to be hard to keep him off the floor. And I doubt, maybe I'm wrong, but I doubt you'll see many 2 big men lineups with both the combination of Jalen Williams and Connor this season.
I think it just depends on who you're playing, what the matchup's going to be. But I think you're right in it probably slows down the pace they want to play at in transition. If you have both of those guys out there.
One of the things Eric Musselman mentioned, you brought up transition, is when Connor's getting these blocks, they really didn't. Now, Adrio had some blocks last season, don't get me wrong, but they didn't have just this huge force in the middle. And I know Connor's a little slender and stuff, but one of the things Eric Musselman has said about Connor's impact is when he blocks a shot or gets a steal or something like that, that gets them quicker on transition. So I think you're going to see a lot more transition, not only with the depth this season, but also when you have Connor blocking these shots, that's a quick turnaround going the other way.
Yep, and I enjoyed watching him in the Mississippi Valley State game and how he handled him being Connor Vandenberg at the transition. There's a lot of times where the ball went inside, it was a dribble drive, he would start fading back and getting back on defense a little bit earlier sometimes. So his transition game is going to be fun to kind of watch and see how they handle him, and because he's not the fastest up and down the floor. He's not horrible, but as I said in the last segment, he's not Daniel Gafford either, who ran the floor very well for a big guy.
And so, as a big man, you're taught to run to the paint, but with Connor, you can't really do that as much because he's going to be a slow trailer from behind, and if you give him all this space, he's going to line up and hit a 3 and get a bunch of wide open threes. Didn't necessarily have that in this past game, didn't get that many opportunities, but when you play defense like he did, he's going to continue to get those opportunities, especially if he's the one that's kind of igniting the break with these different blocks like he had against the Mean Green.
And the transition game was different. If you look at in the stat package in the spot chart there where it shows where the shots are made and missed from, Arkansas, where in the previous game made a lot of shots from the wing or the elbow in 3, I think they only made 2 shots the entire game left or right from those spots on the floor, and they took like 16 attempts. So much different game on where Arkansas was executing shots from. Clearly they had the hot hand against Mississippi Valley State. Shots just weren't falling. And that's where defense has got to win you ball games.
North Texas never led throughout the basketball game. They only shot 36%. And as you mentioned, the defense needs to continue to travel. You know, you play 2 games at home. You want to see this not only in Bud Walton Arena, but the other venues you play, particularly in the SEC. And we saw that Connor played a lot of minutes in this basketball game. I think, what you said, 34
is
that
how
many he played? Yeah. So I don't know how many times we'll see that this season. Now, if he plays like that, I think we're going to see it more often than not. Vince Jackson Jackson didn't play a lot. You didn't see a lot of minutes for KK Robinson, but this lineup is going to continue to be tinkered with, and I don't know if we're necessarily going to have a solidified starting lineup or solidified rotation. And if we do, I don't know what point that's going to be, because Musk said after the game this roster is going to be the lineup is going to be fluctuating, mm-hmm. and so you're going to continue to see different pieces fit here, fit there, and I which is fine as long as they keep winning. You don't really care if the starting roster is set in stone or not.
Well, and to give a point or a finer point on your juxtaposition here, Connor Vanover had 18 minutes in game one versus the 34 in game two. Jalen Williams, who did not play on Saturday against North Texas, played 20 minutes, played half the game in game one. Now, when you're when you're leading by 60 and 70 and you ultimately win by 80, I mean, a lot of guys get to play. But, Jalen Williams was playing quality minutes early when, I don't know if the game was ever in doubt, but when the game was much more competitive against Mississippi Valley State. And they knew going in, though, what kind of game they were going to have in their first one.
And there's going to be times, you didn't necessarily see it on Saturday, there's going to be times that Connor's going to get pushed around a little bit because of his size, because of his stature. Yes, he may be 7'3", but he doesn't necessarily have a lot of meat on their bones. He still needs to add muscle if he wants to be a really, really good SEC college basketball player. It's a completely different type of challenge when you go up against guys that Kentucky and Tennessee. By the way, both those games are on the road this season.
And by the way, we should point out, because we should always point this out, Kentucky lost.
They did weekend to the Richmond Spiders yesterday, which is always fulfilling. Like, Texas lost, Kentucky lost. It was a good weekend for us all.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Got the announcement yesterday from the SEC office that Arkansas will play the Missouri Tigers 11 a.m. on the SEC network. Arkansas opened up as a 3-point underdog, depending on what Vegas service you look at. And not surprising to see them once again. They were slated originally at 11 a.m. when this game was supposed to be played, and now it's back at that.
Yeah, and, this I don't say surprised me, but I thought with the way the schedule worked out, they have really moved a lot of pieces around, took games that were already on the board, off the board, like the Missouri-Mississippi State game, in order to get things to kind of fit. They're just trying to make sure every team gets 10 in, and they really want to make sure this Alabama-LSU game got in this weekend. You were kind of early to call this, that this might happen, getting this Bama, taking the Arkansas-Bama game off to put this LSU game on. But they made sure Arkansas had a game this weekend and didn't go another week without a game. And that was my concern, is that Arkansas would go two weekends without a game. And we've seen teams in this league, including Bama, including LSU, go as far as 21 days in between games. And fortunately, Arkansas won't have to go that far. We'll find out a little bit later today, I guess, when Sam visits with the media about kind of where they're at personnel-wise.
Yeah, and I really want to know. I don't know how much intel we'll actually get out of that, but hopefully we'll get some as far as where they stack up when you're talking about who can play on Saturday. So that's 11 a.m. The Lipscomb basketball game is going to be at 5 p.m., so you'll get a little Arkansas basketball and a little Arkansas football. Chuck's going to be on call, and Quinn, as obviously, are going to be on call for the football game, and then Phil's actually going to be doing the basketball game on Saturday night. So excited to hear from Phil call the Lipscomb game. And you get a little combination. I love these combos when you get into November and December with Arkansas football and basketball being on the same day. You just get this flurry of both sports that you're more than happy to partake in.
Yeah, so kind of almost back-to-back in these games. By the time the post-game show will end, we'll have a real brief wrap-up show that we're going to do right here on ESPN Arkansas in between the two broadcasts, and then 4:30 will be the pregame time for the basketball game, so there won't be long in between the postgame for football and the pregame for basketball.
UT Arlington, they'll take on them 8 o'clock on Wednesday. Got a late tip-off on Wednesday night, so that's kind of your game times as far as it goes this week.
As a morning radio man, I don't like the 8 p.m. start, but it is what it is.
Well, Jenkins is going to be kind of our member that's going to the game, and I asked him, I was like, buddy, you want to go to the game for this? And he said, yeah, sure. It's trust me, man, I've been to a few of those. They're late when you get back and stuff, so it's just a matter of managing to wake wake up that next morning.
It'd be about 11 o'clock when you get home.
I need to put the phones on automation Thursday morning.
Get an autopilot in
there. Get autopilot in here for Thursday.
Yeah. Get up in early. Biggest news coming out of the SEC, Derek Mason has been let go by the Vanderbilt Commodores. And the question I had immediately as soon as this happened, we've seen Will Muschamp be fired. Now Derek Mason is the next one off to be offed. Who's next? And these are two high-profile SEC. I say high-profile. Vanderbilt doesn't really have high-profile when it comes to their football program, but they are two SEC programs. Now you got two open jobs in the Southeastern Conference. Jordan Rogers, former Vanderbilt quarterback, current SEC Network analyst, he said he likes Barry Odom to at least take a look at that job. I don't know if there's any connection, any way that would actually work or happen there. But what I was thinking about as Texas lost to the Iowa State Cyclones on Saturday, is there a chance that Tom Herman, which would be the biggest job opening in college football, is there a chance that Texas parts ways with Tom Herman?
Well, listen, if South Carolina and Vanderbilt can fire their coaches, and I was one that said I didn't think there'd be a lot of firings. Now, there's been two in the SEC. That's honestly about one more than I thought there'd be for the whole year at this point. So I'm a little surprised Vanderbilt has went ahead and made a move this early. So if those two schools, if Vanderbilt and South Carolina can make a move on their coach, Texas certainly can. Texas can afford it more than those two schools combined. So it won't be finances won't be the reason at Texas. If they decide to make a change.
They lost their highly touted number one quarterback. I know in Texas, and he might be in the country. His name's Quinn Ewers. If I remember that correctly, he decommitted from Texas. Now he's committed to Ohio State. So it seems like that, and it was funny that Tom Herman, and I'm forgetting if he said this in a press conference or how this was reported, but he says like the rumors about Urban Meyer being linked to Texas is hurting his recruiting. And the joke that many people were making was, well, no, it would actually help your recruiting if Urban Meyer was linked to the University of Texas. So there's always these wild conspiracy theories when it comes to that football program, who's going to take over. I mean, there's been people saying that Mack Brown should come back after the success he's had at North Carolina. But Tom Herman, most definitely, even if he's not let go after this year, he is definitely, his seat's getting hotter in Austin.
And who was the coach they were after hot and heavy when they hired Tom Herman? Who was the one they wanted? Who was their number one prime target?
Nick Saban.
Nick Saban. So would they put their sights on Nick again? That would be interesting.
Listen, you can hate the University of Texas all you want, and if this, you would want it to wait because Texas does come to Fayetteville next year, but it would be nice to get Nick Saban out of the SEC, if we're being honest. Yeah. You would rather have, and this, you know, listen, you hate hearing this, but you would probably legitimately, it would be better for your football program. And I'm trying to think, I don't think this is a miscarriage state. I don't think this is terrible. It would probably be better your football program if Nick Saban was at Texas and Alabama.
Wouldn't that be the most Arkansas thing ever, though? You finally get Nick out of the league, but oh, by the way, you got to play him with a game year. Two, his first year in Texas next year.
At least
you don't quite get rid of him yet.
Just yet. I don't know that
he would entertain that. I don't know that he would even be a prime target after last time, but you have to pick up the phone and ask if you're Texas, right? If they go through with it and make a change, you're obligated to at least pick up the phone and say, hey, is there interest?
You have to at least make him tell you, say no.
Exactly.
That's the whole idea. Now, would he even, as you mentioned, would he even entertain it? I don't know. But like you said, you got to at least, hey, you got to tell us no.
And we keep saying the pandemic, the finances, you know, these schools are dealing with 75-80% reduction in ticket sales. As a coach, can you really even feel good about leveraging one of these opportunities that come your way for a raise right now? Maybe you don't care if you feel good about it. I don't. Maybe you go through with that anyway. What is your image? What kind of hit will your image take with your own fan base? You know, Frank Broyles used to say every time your name comes up with a job, you lose, was it 10% of your fan base or 15%? He had a percentage he put that you lose every time your name even comes up with a job. So, you know, for Nick Saban, do you even let it go that far? I don't know.
But if you're Nick Saban and you do all you can do, like if you're like let's say Sam Pittman's job is linked to other schools just because there might not be
like great reporting as far as that goes. Like, is Sam Pittman really going to lose fans from this fan base? Now, if he took the job somewhere else, but that's just not going to happen.
I don't know
right?
Is that adage true anymore with social media? Because you're right, some of the reporting out there isn't always accurate.
I mean,
I'm just saying that's the adage Coach Broyles used. That probably applied 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah, here's my thing. If I wanted to just have some fun and start a rumor tomorrow, yeah, or after, let's say Arkansas beats Missouri this weekend and Sam Pittman gets the four wins and he's going to be again in the conversation with the SEC coach of the year. I don't think he'll win it, but he'll at least be in that conversation. And I decided to go to my phone and tweet out, hey, Sam Pittman's being linked to so and so job.
And then it just
blew up and exploded. Rather, it's, I mean, of course it wouldn't be valid or anything. And then it would, like, to me, I don't think Sam Pittman, I would be losing like listeners and fans if I had said that, because it's not true.
I was saying credible. I mean, I meant when what Coach Broyles was talking about was credible links to a job, but you're actually playing footsies with another school.
Here's what I'm saying to that. I think social media has just like kind of changed that in a sense where there's so much
I agree with you.
I don't know if I'd go to the far extent of lies, but it's just misinformation. But you see a bunch of garbage on that.
I do think you got agents like Jimmy Sexton out there that they like to play as much footsies with other schools and opportunities as possible because they see a chance to get either an addition to your contract, a raise, a better guarantee. So, something's in it for you just by the flirtation.
Something in for me, it also means something in for Jimmy Sexton.
Exactly. Because
he's going to make some more money when it comes to that. Jenkins, I'll get your thoughts on this. What did you think of the Tyson Roy Jones Jr. fight and the Nate Robinson and Jake Paul fight as well?
I mean, not surprised by both of them. I thought Tyson and Roy Jones, I mean, for being that many years out, I mean, Roy Jones has only been 3 years out of boxing and Mike Tyson for 14 or 15 years at that point.
2005.
I mean, you could tell their age and wear and tear on them, but I mean, they looked a hell of a lot better than I thought they were going to, be completely honest with you.
They got tired.
What was the pay-per-view on that? How much did that cost?
$50.
Did you pay for it?
I didn't. I was back home, and we don't have very good Wi-Fi at our house back out in the country where we live, so I didn't get to watch it, but I seen plenty of highlights on YouTube. I saw the nasty knockout Jake Paul gave Nate Robinson.
Twice, basically.
He knocked him out once, and they let him keep going. Then now you're seeing memes everywhere of Nate Robinson falling out. But no, it was a good match. Not surprised by the draw. I mean, I was fine with it. I kind of personally would have liked to have seen Tyson win for our halftime game day picks, and Phil, for some reason, picked it to end in a draw, and I'm a little bit salty about that right now.
I think you're going to have to watch The Exorcist based on
I'm not watching The Exorcist. That is not... Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. No, the match was great. I was pleasantly surprised, and I think we're going to see, maybe not necessarily with Roy Jones, but this ain't the last time we're going to see Tyson in the ring.
It felt like it was set up to, there had to be a rematch of Tyson involved somehow, because they labeled it a draw. To me, I mean, I'm not even going to sit here and say that I understand Bob, but like, to me, it looked like Tyson won.
Tyson landed more punches. I mean, he won pretty much in every conceivable category that a normal boxing match probably would have went his way. But who knows? It may have been
Wait. I'm hearing some undertows, some implications that boxing may actually be rigged a little bit. The decision and the outcome of a boxing match, and particularly an exhibition match, might actually be rigged to set up a rematch. Is that the implication I'm hearing from you two gentlemen?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
That a decision might be made for financial gain of in a future event.
Hey, if I can hear Snoop Dogg and Mauro Ranallo do commentary again, sign me up. I'll definitely buy it again, because Snoop Dogg on commentary was a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, it was highly entertaining all around. I was disappointed to see Jake Paul beat Nate Robinson, because I think Jake Paul's a punk, and I wish Nate Robinson would have done the reverse and knocked him out, but we unfortunately didn't get to see that. All right, Kansas City Chiefs got a big-time win against Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers yesterday. Tyreek Hill had himself a game.
And on first down here against a really good Tampa defense, he's throwing it long. Gunning it long, Tyreek Hill holds it in at the 20, 15,
15, 10, 5, touchdown! Kansas City, Tyreek Hill, an explosive first quarter, 75-yard touchdown reception on a perfect strike from Patrick Mahomes.
Tyreek Hill had 269 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns. Patrick Mahomes had himself a dandy of a day. Once again, you see another great matchup between Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes, and you wonder how many more you're going to get to see based on that Tom is at the end of his career and Patrick's looks like it's just taking off.
Yeah, and fun game. I mean, I guess the biggest star you've had for 20 years in your game and probably the guy that's going to be the biggest star for the next 15 years in the sport. So kind of, I don't know if that's a handoff, you know, in what you saw yesterday. I know Tom Brady has not been – yeah, it's interesting to see what's going on with the Patriots and with Tom Brady, and really neither Belichick and his team nor Tom Brady on his own, neither one have been as good as you'd hoped for them to have been without each other this year. It's hard to say which one was carrying the other because right now they seem to neither one be doing as well without being together.
Yeah, and it's the consistent battle between, hey, who's doing better between Belichick and Brady. It's hard to make a quick determination on that in this point. And another thing I want to talk about as far as NFL is concerned, so we'll get into this coming up. We saw Brandon Allen start for the Cincinnati Bengals yesterday. Did not get the win. The New York Giants edged it out 19-17. I want to talk about particular comparisons between BA and your current starting quarterback, Felipe Franks.
All right, those are your quick hitting headlines. They're brought to you by The Fence Man. Anything involving a fence that you need to call The Fence Man. 479-782-3936. Fence, gates, powered gates, controlled access. They do all of those kind of things for you. Also ask about 18-month, same-as-cash financing that they have available now as well. Anything you've got involving a fence, the Fence Man can do it for you. 479-782-3936. The Fence Man, he ain't afraid of no work.
Before we get into that comparison, I want to go to the phone lines and welcome in Bob in Hot Springs. He wants to discuss what occurred with Vanderbilt letting go Derek Mason. Bob, you're on the Morning Rush.
Yeah, we'll have to come back to Bob.
Yeah, it looks like we're going to have to come back to Bob. So.
Pick up the phone, baby.
All right, so with this Brandon Allen and Felipe Franks comparison, I thought there was a really good piece that Trey Biddy of Hog Sports compared the two. And I'm watching this game, and I felt similarities with Felipe and BA this season because I feel like that Felipe hasn't necessarily gotten the respect that he's deserved. It's actually kind of funny. You know that who was game planning against Cincinnati on Saturday on the other side of the football, right?
Well, yeah.
You know, Jenkins, you know,
I do.
Like, think about that. Is that not weird?
Yeah.
Is that not weird?
His
think
former
of
head
Brett,
coach.
His former head coach and Brett Bielema was on the defensive line for the New York Giants, and he's having a game plan against his starting quarterback in college in Brandon Allen. So that was kind of cool to see that combination get played out. Brett Bielema and company, I wouldn't necessarily say it was him. That's actually, I'd say actually the defensive line had a pretty good game. So for whatever Brett Bielema had game plan, it worked because Brandon was under pressure all game long, and I think that's partially because his offensive line. But when you look at the Felipe and Brandon comparison, Brandon Allen had a great 2015 season that was really sparked from the Auburn game that they were able to beat Gus Malzahn. And go back to 2015, he throws for 30 touchdowns, has only 8 interceptions, and a school record 166 passer rating. And yet, Tommy, if you remember that season, there were still people that I'm assuming were calling into the Morning Rush that thought they should have gone to Austin Allen at points that season.
Oh, I mean, but the backup quarterback's always the most popular guy on any team. Yeah, you mentioned offensive line and how BA didn't get a lot of help from his O-line. I just think about, you know, Felipe Franks and compared to the O-line that Brandon Allen had then compared to what Felipe Franks is dealing with now, and really that was kind of the beginning, the end of serviceable offensive lines. There were guys on that line, several guys on those offensive lines that were part of what Sam Pittman had built that played in the NFL, had chances either as free agents or were drafted in the NFL. There's not going to be, it hadn't been a lot of those stories off this offensive line lately. So when you compare numbers, I think you also got to compare offensive lines too.
Well, and you do that. So let's label out the offensive line. When you have Denver Kirkland, you have Dan Skipper, you have Frank Ragnow, you have Mitch Smothers, and you have Sebastian Tortola. five really good offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. Who led the SEC in sacks given up that year?
I don't know.
Arkansas. Yeah. 14. That's all they gave up that year. That's the only amount of sacks that year. Arkansas this season, 27 they've already given up.
And some of those sacks this year, 27's on Frank.
And again, that's what I was going to say. But, I mean, it's not even a comparison when you look at the two offensive lines and say, hey, which one would you rather have backing you up as a quarterback? You clearly pointed to 2015. Yeah. But you look at Felipe so far this season, he's beating out Brandon as far as completion percentage, has thrown for 17 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions. And again, has the single season completion percentage right now at 68, and that could be the all-time record if he continues up at this pace and beats out Kevin Scanlon, who did it in 70 something. I'm forgetting the exact year, but that just goes to show you the type of game that Felipe is having, and he's doing it again behind an offensive line that is serviceable, but nowhere near the caliber that Brandon, Tyler, or Ryan had.
Even Austin Allen had, I think, was it 16 or 17? He had sack numbers north of 24.
Atrocious. Yeah, it was above 30. I think it was 33 or 34. So, he was sacked more in 2016 than Brandon was sacked throughout his entire career. So, or like some, it was like, it's like one sack or two off how close that was. And that shows you just once Sam Pittman left and Kurt Anderson came in, the offensive line went down drastically. But I'm watching this game between the Bengals and the Giants, and again, we've watched Felipe this season, and there's been people complain on this very radio station. There's been people that have complained through message boards and stuff. Hey, Felipe's not doing this. Hey, Felipe's not doing that. But when it comes to this type of conversation, you don't know what you have until it's gone. Let's say Felipe can't suit up on Saturday against Missouri Tigers. My outlook on the game completely changes. Like, I think that Arkansas is going to beat Missouri on Saturday. But
I don't know if it's Denver Broncos bad, but you know, I think it's not that situation, but you're getting to a point where, it's a whole different offensive game.
It's a whole different ball game. If you look at the game, if Felipe isn't able to go against Missouri, I think your outlook changes from a win to a loss, just because you don't know necessarily what you can get in terms of a full game from KJ Jefferson or Malik Hornsby. And I think when you go back to Brandon Allen in 2015, there was a lot of people that say, oh, he's not doing this, he's not doing that. And like when it came down to it, he was probably the second or third best quarterback in the SEC that year.
Now, in fairness, where would KJ Jefferson or Hornsby, either one, be if they had gotten the reps in practice and all the development and all the attention from the coaching staff and Kendall Briles to get them ready, not just for one game, but for a season? They haven't received the attention that the starting quarterback has gotten. So it's also not a fair comparison to compare the two and the three quarterback to the number one when you don't get the reps in practice or all of the prep work that goes into being the starter.
But don't you earn those reps by how you play?
Not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying, if you just swap quarterbacks right now, if there was an injury and now all of a sudden Franks can't go, it's also not an equal comparison based on the development that's went into Franks to get to this point.
I just felt like that, and I felt like several times this season when it comes to talking about Felipe Franks, his game, what he's meant to this program, you've mentioned, hey, maybe it resolutes to a win or two, depending on how much impact you think Felipe has had on this team.
Who would you beat without him? Of the three wins you got, who would you have beaten without Felipe Franks?
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
We bring in Tom Murphy here on the Morning Rush. Tom, I wonder, have you already thought what you're going to ask Sam Pittman today? I think health, COVID numbers is always a concern. What are you wanting to talk to Sam Pittman today about at 12 o'clock?
Yeah, just what the second unexpected open week was about. It looks to me like, well, he said Thursday that they really didn't do any heavy hitting or do any hitting at all, did walkthroughs and stuff like that. So they have to kind of regroup and refocus, redirect. I tell you, y'all watching this Missouri team, they're pretty salty. So, you know, maybe get a little bit more in depth about what he saw from them
after the shutout over the weekend.
Tom, you probably remember the Missouri defensive lineman and linebacker Eric Bazell make the comments kind of derogatory towards Arkansas, speaking down on the state. And I know that ticked a lot of people off, and yet Missouri was still able to beat the Razorbacks. Last time you beat them was in 2015. How important is it for Sam Pittman to get off on the right note against Missouri and kind of rekindle this rivalry a little bit?
Well, in the full spectrum of where Sam Pittman wants to get this program going and how wants people to view it, winning another road game at Missouri, your Thanksgiving weekend traditionally rival, would be very big. And that 2016 team, Arkansas had, I thought in 2014, the renewal game up there in Columbia, the Razorbacks got out to a lead, and I can't remember all the details, but I felt like they might should have won that game, and I think they were a pretty big underdog. They won it in 2015, cold, rainy day, 28-3. Drew Locke was still kind of a baby at quarterback at that time, and obviously got a lot better. But I thought the 2016 game, Barry Odom's first against Arkansas, that was Arkansas's game to win, and he gambled on a 4th-and-7 deep in his own territory and ran this fake punt look. And it came one play after Ryan Pulley almost intercepted a pass deep in Missouri territory, almost picked it off. Then they run the fake punt, and the momentum switched, and Missouri won that game. Well, they haven't lost to the Razorbacks since then, and just a total giveaway game. So it's very important for Arkansas. I mean, this is going to be your – season-ending trophy game to start winning some of them, including on the road.
Yeah, you mentioned Barry Odom. That's one of the understories here is his return to Columbia, Missouri, as being their former head coach. And what kind of motivation does that provide for these players? I mean, they weren't his players at Missouri, but they're his players now. I mean, I would think they would want to have his back in this situation. How much do you think he would want to play up that angle this week for the defensive side of the ball?
I think the players probably would do that for him. And Sam Carter obviously had been at Missouri as well, and Brad Davis. So you got guys on both sides of the ball who have a pretty good knowledge of Missouri personnel. And not only that, but they've had a couple of weeks to break them down and look at their strengths and weaknesses and how to attack them. Man, I see this game as a total toss-up. I know that Missouri opened as a 1.5 favorite, which – is almost like, Arkansas favored on a neutral field in this game. But having watched them on Saturday, they're playing with a lot more confidence. Bazalack in the run-pass option game looks very, very, very tricky because Roundtree is a tough guy to get down on the ground. Beatty's a guy you could use in all different kind of ways. They've got a good set of receivers, including Bannister, who had that one big series in Little Rock last year that turned the tide of that game. So, and their defense is really striking right now. And Nick Bolton is one of the best linebackers in the country. So, this is going to be a difficult game. Arkansas needs to win it in the trenches. And, if they had their defensive line all together against LSU, I have pretty good confidence they would have won that game. And they'd be sitting here at 4-4 with a chance to go to 500 and guarantee a 500 record for the season.
We're told this is a rivalry. It doesn't feel like a rivalry. What has to happen for this actually to become a rivalry between Arkansas and Missouri?
Yeah, Tommy, I don't know. I mean, does it take a couple of decades to feel like a rivalry? Does it take an in-game fight or something like that? I don't know. Maybe just some classic games, some classic finishes, things that people will remember. Like, when we talk about the LSU series, you got the Kobe Hamilton play before halftime. You got Darren McFadden with a wooden bat. You got huge wins for the Razorbacks that kind of get seared into your memory. And right now, that 28-3 game here in Fayetteville, all I remember was it was dismal. It was rainy. And other details of that game just escaped me. So, just need to have some fantastic finishes and things like that. I did later that day go down to West Fork and watch Smackover with a young Jordan Jones play against West Fork in the playoffs in the rain.
How about that, man? You're just busy bee that day, talking with Tom Murphy here on the Morning Rush. Tom, when you think about the jobs that have opened up so far in the SEC, South Carolina and Vanderbilt, I found it interesting that Jordan Rogers thought that Barry Odom would be a name that Vanderbilt should consider. Is that something that Arkansas should keep an eye on, those two SEC jobs popping open with a former head coach in this conference who's your DC?
Well, yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. His work this season hasn't gone unnoticed by the people who make decisions. So he'll probably be in line for a good raise. And it just depends on what he told Sam Pittman. Like, hey, I'd like to stick with you for 3-4 years. I don't know what conversations they've had together. 1 year, I'm sure he would aspire to go back to being a head coach, but Vandy's a very, very tough job. Jordan Rogers did refer to him as a program builder type of coach. And, you know, I get it. I think Barry Odom has the right mentality and personality to be a program builder. But after one season at Arkansas, do you want to take that on? And overnight yesterday, during the course of the day, I did read several other, you know, kind of plugged in and national guys who have a good feel. And I don't think Odom ranks as highly, just in terms of guys who would be a good natural fit at Vanderbilt, as some a handful of other guys. So at this stage, I don't know if he would be way high on Vanderbilt's radar. But I would like to see Barry Odom get another shot as a head coach somewhere, but maybe not as difficult a rebuild as a Vanderbilt.
Tom, you brought up the 2014 game, and if you remember, Brandon Allen was injured the second half of that game, and that's kind of why Arkansas wasn't able to pull it out. But we were discussing earlier the comparison between Felipe Franks and Brandon Allen as we're sitting watching BA start for the Bengals yesterday, and I felt like that both Felipe this season and Brandon in 2015 weren't fully appreciated for what they did for the Razorbacks. Do you think that Felipe Franks has gotten enough credit for what he's done for this football team in 2020?
I guess it depends on where you look for your validation in the press, on TV. And I think Felipe's gotten a lot of good publicity. I mean, every time I do radio spots with the other team, Florida and, you know, Auburn and all these other radio deals I do, I talk about what a huge addition he's been. I mean, just his maturity level. And his huge arm. I mean, think about the big touchdowns he's connected on with Burks and Woods and Devion Warren. The fact he keeps him in games, how important his legs are. You know, Brandon Allen, I think, was a very underrated scrambler. I thought, you know, that probably could have been exploited a little bit more. And certainly a guy who knew the ins and outs of the offense, very clever guy. And Felipe, even though you think of him as a guy who can hurt you with his legs, he slipped in the LSU game, and he's kind of it seems like it's hard for him to stay on balance when he makes a cut. And I don't know if it's due to wet grass or anything, but if I'm evaluating Felipe, I say he's done an A job. He's done great work in terms of knowing the offense, getting guys in the right spot, delivering the ball on time, the deep ball touch. But he's held on to it. He's held on to the ball a little bit more than you'd want. I mean, if you're really going to critique him, and probably had a few more sacks when maybe he should bolt straight out of the pocket when option A, B, C is not open, go, instead of kind of looking at the rush. So to me, that's a very, you know, a minor point, but it's a valid point.
Let me shift to basketball for a second, and maybe we'll come back and cap off the conversation with another football question or two. But we didn't get to visit on Thursday because of the holiday, but Arkansas is off to a 2-0 start in basketball. Scored 142 in the first game, 69 in their second game. Mm-hmm. I know you're not covering it directly in this COVID era. Bob's at the games, but I know you've been watching intently what has happened with this basketball team these first two games. Just your thoughts after Arkansas kind of blew the doors off of Mississippi Valley State and then you know, had a whole different game plan to beat North Texas on Saturday.
Yeah, I get the sense that Eric Musselman is highly engaged, like highly interested in how to deploy his talent. He didn't use the bench. He didn't go as deep, near as deep in the North Texas game. Well, it wasn't really a blowout, and it was such a different pace game, as you mentioned. I mean, Grant McCaslin has got it going on in terms of they won the conference last year. They know what they're doing. They want you to play at their tempo. And Arkansas just happened to be, you know, better. They didn't shoot great in that game. And, of course, Valley comes down and shoots it before, you know, 15 seconds is down off the shot clock. And Arkansas just had a great shooting night. I tell you, I think Connor Vanover's rebounding shot blocking is probably a little bit stronger than I expected it would be. And obviously he's going to be a key cog now. But I do think they need to get a little bit more defensive rebounding from people other than Vanover. And the good thing is they got many games to go before conference, and they can kind of sort things out. But yeah, how much are the freshmen, the true freshmen, going to really impact this roster remains to be seen. But, you know, like the direction so far, they got some good veterans like Smith and Tate and Note, who look like they could be good end-of-game guys.
Tom, before we let you go, man, do you want to talk about your Falcons, the big win yesterday?
I put out a tweet that, you know, if we crush the team, that the one team that beat the Chiefs this year, then what logically that makes us the best team in football. Of course, that was a joke. We've choked away too many games this year, but, you know, at 4-7, if you reverse the games we blew against the Bears and the Cowboys and the Lions, you know, suddenly, you know, we could be a 7-4 team. But I know that's not going to happen. And I don't know what's going to happen with Matt Ryan. He looked great yesterday. Who knows what direction we're headed?
That's a good question. All right, Tom, we appreciate it as always, buddy. We'll get into more of a preview of Missouri on Thursday.
Sounds great. Thank y'all.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time we're coming for the whole damn thing.
Missouri opened as a couple points favorite in this matchup. You would probably either have even money or you might be favored on a neutral field. And this is going to be, I think, a close football game come Saturday. You're down 3-8 in the series history, and Missouri has won 5 of the last 6. Now, these are games a lot of times where Arkansas has had the advantage and then just let it go at the very end. And Arkansas, if given the opportunity, needs to close this game out on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, we were talking with Tom Murphy just a few minutes ago about the importance of this game for some of these coaches, Sam Carter, Brad Davis, and most notably Barry Odom, who was the head coach there a year ago. You know, do these players maybe want to step up a little bit more for their position coach, perhaps, or their defensive coordinator, and, you know, maybe go a little further this week? Everyone should be rested, ready, healed up, should be tired of losing this game. You know, like we were talking about with Tom, we're told this is a rivalry. Somehow you've got to win some of these to make it feel like a rivalry. One reason it doesn't feel like a rivalry, the series lately hasn't been very even. One of the things to me that makes a rivalry great is you're playing for something other than a fictitious made-up trophy, but the game has some consequences. I don't know when the next time Arkansas-Missouri is going to play that something is in the outcome of the game, like a spot in the division or a bigger bowl or something like that, but I know this series will never feel like a true rivalry until Arkansas starts winning some of these.
And that's on the onus of Arkansas, like,
yeah,
you mentioned, which is very important. And you mentioned the competitive edge that you're hoping to see out of these players, whether it's Brad Davis, Sam Carter, most notably Barry Odom. I wonder, as coaches, and maybe they don't necessarily voice it, maybe it's just the players in the locker room and players-only conversations, like, hey, we need to go win it for this guy or this guy or this guy. Because to say, like, I know coaches have to use the general, generic coach speak when it comes to, oh, this game's just like the same as it is in the other. They have to say that continuously because you don't want to place more importance on one game than the other, because then that leads to preparing harder for one game. You want the preparation to be as diligent and as hardworking for every game. But to say that this game doesn't mean more to Barry Odom than any game on the schedule is laughable. Like, he was fired by his alma mater. Mm-hmm. To say that that does not have an impact, and he might not necessarily tell the players that, but they know that. Like, if you were let go by your alma mater, or like your a relative, or I mean that like when you think about the family aspect of going to school, playing football for a certain school, coaching there, and then being fired by that, to say that that does not, this game does not mean more to Barry Odom than any other game, I think it's just false. Unequivocally false.
Yeah, I don't know that you're going to get those words out of his mouth.
Oh, you're not, because we're not going to hear from him this
week. We're
drawing
a conclusion, but it seems like a pretty plausible conclusion.
And I would think that, again, he's motivated. We've seen it this season that this defense has been motivated, most notably by their defensive coordinator. But I think you'll see even more firepower this week because of how much he wants to win this game. And again, you're not going to hear it publicly, but privately, I guarantee you this game means more than any other game on the schedule to Barry Odom.
And what did we spend all of the offseason talking about? How are you going to do against the M schools? Can you win two of those three? That'd be a successful season if you could beat two of the three with Missouri, Ole Miss, Mississippi State. Well, you've done that. Well, what a feeling it'd be, I guess, to some degree to say, you know, in vindication to a degree, I guess, for Sam Pittman, that everyone kind of laughed at nationally a little bit, that this is your coach, a guy that you hired that has no previous head coaching experience at this level. But, you know, we all know the storyline there. You know, and comparing him to Leach, comparing to Kiffin, comparing to Drinkwitz, and all these things we spent this long offseason doing. And if you go 3-0 against those teams, That's one more check mark on your side of the ledger. So that also, to me, is something that you're playing for, to go 3-0 against those teams that are in kind of equal footing. We did the same thing with Bielema and Gus. Gus got the better of that equation. Here's a chance to at least get off to the right start in the first year against all three of those schools.
And it is a hot take Monday brought to you by Wheels RV. You could legitimately say, again, if you want to throw out this hot take, that Arkansas has made the best decision based on your number one if they win on Saturday. And you could say even if they lose on Saturday, maybe they made the best decision for the school. But if you want a definitive statement after a win on Saturday, you could say, well, Arkansas made the best hire because Sam beat Eli, he beat Lane, and he beat Mike in the same year. Three other head coaches that were hired in the exact same time period that your guy was hired as well. So we're bringing up the Barry Odom angle. This game also means a lot to Sam Pittman. Now, like Barry Odom, he's not going to speak about this publicly or not, that, hey, it's just another game on our schedule, it's a rivalry game or whatever. But if you look at it from that angle, this game also means a lot to Sam Pittman because that's a notch on his belt. Because whether Sam doesn't seem like a guy that is just so ingratiated within media and wanting to hear all these opinions and stuff, but to say that that hasn't made his way to his television screen or his computer screen or his iPhone, that he hasn't seen what other college football people have said, that would feel pretty good if you're Sam Pittman looking around saying, well, I beat the guy that they said that this was going to be better than me, they said that Lane was going to be better than me, and that, like, all these different people that said, oh, they're going to be better than Sam, they're going to be better than Sam, they're going to be better than Sam, and then Sam said, well, I'm now 3-0 against these guys. That's the opportunity that he has.
And it's year one. I mean, we really can't answer that question until 2-3 years in. But, you know, you can't be 1-0 till you win the first one, right? So, you know, so it doesn't definitely answer the question, but it's certainly a step in the right direction, whether or not you hired the right guy compared to the other guys that were, you know, reportedly on your list. I don't think there's any question that Arkansas desired and went after Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach. I think there's definitely some validity to those two statements. So,
which Hunter Yurcheks is like not gonna, he's just
sure,
not gonna
but
answer.
I mean, there's some validity to the fact that those were two targets in Arkansas's coaching search. But, you know, I'm sure for Sam Pittman, somewhere deep down inside, and like you said, you're not going to drag it out of him publicly in a press conference, he wants to win a game on some level for that validation that you did hire the right guy.
Yeah, and it would be validation to this point. We know that college football isn't just based on one particular season. It's based on the tenure of that head coach. But it's hard not to argue that Arkansas didn't make the right move, especially when you went 3 and again, this is under the prospect if you beat Missouri on Saturday. Mm-hmm. If you went 3-0 against the Missouri schools, you also beat Tennessee, and then at least you were competitive against Alabama. I mean, that's a really hot start, and I'd say outside of a handful of people, that's a lot better start to Sam Pittman's tenure than many anticipated when it comes to Arkansas football.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.